Blog Talk Radio.
Skyrocketing healthcare and insurance costs. Extremely modest gains against chronic disease. Thousands die yearly due to drug reactions. What can be done? Thomas Edison is quoted as declaring, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but interest his patients in diet and nutrition, exercise, and the care of the human frame. He will teach them about the cause of all disease." The doctors of the future are here. Welcome to Phase 3 Wellness with your host, Keith Henry, MD, one of the doctors of the future.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining me. This is Dr. Keith Henry from Phase 3 Wellness. On this beautiful Sunday afternoon, I'm coming to you from the Orlando, Florida area for another episode of Phase 3 Wellness. We have an interesting and exciting show for you today. Again, as normal, we'll follow our outline. If you've listened before, you know we first look at the Week in Natural News Review. That's the first segment. And in that segment, I go through and I find articles that I think that may be interesting to analyze and speak about that came out in the previous week. And then we have a couple of nice, very interesting ones today. And then we go along in the second segment, we go on to the Healing Food segment. And in that segment, I typically talk about a fruit or a vegetable and talk about the benefits of that food, how nutritious it is for your body, some of the vitamins and minerals, et cetera, or even some of the things that it can be done to heal certain ailments that may be in your body. Then finally, we do the Healing Herb segment, where I take a herb, a particular or specific herb, and talk about it in the similar fashion as I do the foods. And again, that is the general outline that we follow here on Phase 3 Wellness. I'd like to thank you for joining me again here. My name is Dr. Keith Henry. I'm a naturopathic doctor. And if you listen before, I typically follow what we call the laws of health. And they are trust in the Creator, sunshine, exercise, water, air, rest, diet, and self-control. These are the basis or foundation of pretty much all healing and prevention of diseases and abnormalities. So what we're going to do, we're going to go ahead and jump right into our first article in our first segment here, the Week in Natural News Review. And the first article I want to talk about is an article that I pulled from the website realpharmacy.com. Very interesting article. And in this article, it's entitled Common Prescription Drugs Linked to Increased Dementia Risk. And it's a very interesting article, and it talked about the effect of drugs basically essentially hindering or destroying the memory over time. And the article, again, it came out this week from realpharmacy.com, and they basically point out in the article how on average the progressive and currently, right now, it's currently regarded as an irreversible brain disorder of talking about Alzheimer's. And they point out how most people associate Alzheimer's with memory loss as one of the first signs or symptoms of the disease. But they go on to point out in the article how there are many factors, which is true, that contribute to an individual's experience, such as their genes, their diet, their lifestyle, and their habits. Now, in any disease or any abnormality which has a genetic component, we have to understand, as it's been said before, that genetics may give you the gun, but your lifestyle pulls the trigger. And there's quite a bit of truth to that, that you may have grown up in a family where diabetes runs in your family on both sides, or hypertension. And so you may actually inherit a tendency or propensity, a genetic propensity to develop that disease. So, but if you eat and drink and live like your parents or your grandparents, et cetera, then the likelihood that you're going to pull the trigger and activate those genes to bring that disease or abnormality upon yourself is quite high. In like fashion, if say you may actually have genetic propensity for developing that disease or abnormality, but you eat differently and you live differently and you try to live a healthy life, the likelihood that you will develop that disease or that abnormality goes down significantly. So that's just how the Creator has made the body to function. So the closer we walk in harmony with a healthy lifestyle, even if we have a genetic propensity to develop something, we can alter that. Call it epigenetics, being able to alter the expression of the genes. Now, the article goes on to point out many factors, again, that contribute to an individual's experience and even the likelihood that they can develop Alzheimer's. Now, according to Alzheimer's.net, as cited in this article, there are 44 million people who have Alzheimer's or a related dementia. Approximately 5,700,000 of those are Americans. So worldwide, they put the number of people having Alzheimer's at about 44 million, and 5,700,000 of those they put as being Americans. It also goes to point out that health officials expect that number to rise in America from 5,700,000 to 16 million by 2050. And it is actually the sixth leading cause of death in America. It's amazing that Alzheimer's is the sixth leading cause of death in America. And there are some early warning signs. And we're going to get to what I'm talking about here in this article is how prescription drugs can actually be linked to memory destruction. Now, some of the early symptoms of Alzheimer's can include memory loss, the inability to plan things or solve problems, difficulty completing simple tasks, getting confused about time, dates, and places, the inability to understand spatial relationships and visuals, new problems when it comes to speaking or writing that you didn't have before, forgetting where you put stuff and being unable to retrace your steps, increasingly poor judgment, growing less and less social, and uncharacteristic changes in your mood or personality. Now, not unlike Alzheimer's, the most common form of dementia, again, is Alzheimer's. General dementia is also a progressive syndrome that impairs your cognitive function or your mental function. That is essentially your ability to think, reason, remember, or behave properly, as the article points out, or even at all. And many of the symptoms actually also overlap Alzheimer's disease. Now, according to this article, growing by 10 million new cases per year, there are about 50 million people worldwide currently living with dementia, according to the World Health Organization. And that's a figure that we expect, they say, according to the World Health Organization, to hit 82 million by 2030 and 152 million as time goes on. They didn't really give the number there. And so now to move on to how this is affected, how drugs can actually affect dementia. The article points out the possibility of keeping the number of dementia cases to a minimum seems unlikely when so many people are on medications that can actually increase the likelihood of developing dementia. Now, they cite a Journal of the American Medical Association Internal Medicine study that was published in the March 2015 issue, which it goes on to say, in March 2015, researchers published a prospective cohort study in the Journal of the American Medical Association, Internal Medicine, called Cumulative Use of Strong Anticholinergics and Incident Dementia. And it says the University of Washington and Seattle Healthcare System Group Health conducted the long-term study, which tracked 3,434 men and women who were aged 65 and up and had no dementia when the study began. The team assessed every participant's history of drug use for the previous decade, including both over-the-counter and prescription drugs. Over a seven-year timeline, they followed up with all the participants every 2 years, during which 797 participants developed dementia. 637 of them developed Alzheimer's disease. So these anticholinergic drugs is what they began to look at as time went on. It goes on to say that as researchers look back on what those 797 individuals took, the anticholinergic drug became the main suspect. The most common anticholinergic drugs participants used were tricyclic antidepressants, and first generation antihistamines, and also bladder control drugs. The article goes on to point out that compared to those who didn't take these drugs, people who did for as little as 3 years were 54% more likely to develop dementia. So those who took these drugs increased the likelihood that they would develop dementia by 54%. That's a significant amount. So had they not taken these drugs, the likelihood that they would have not developed dementia would have gone down by more than 50%. Now, the article goes on to say that usually these types of drugs are prescribed to treat problems including urinary incontinence, Parkinson's disease, and chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder, also known as COPD. Now, the article goes on to say further that if you want to keep your head clear and your brain functioning as highly as possible, steering clear of these drugs seems ideal. And so this is actually an interesting concept when we think about it for a minute. All, as I've said on here before, all drugs have side effects, both known and unknown. And so we have to understand that this is the only thing that they've been able to establish from a study. These drugs have been established quite clearly to increase the likelihood of you taking them, of you developing dementia and the Alzheimer's, and who knows what other unknown side effects, cognitive side effects that may be occurring in people who there's not even a study has been conducted yet. So I would strongly recommend that if you are having any of these issues, that you seek out a competent natural health professional, be it a naturopath, herbalist, or a medical doctor that is also learned and skilled and uses so-called alternative medicine. Because the trade-off is not a good trade-off. If you have COPD or Parkinson's disease or any other disease or the other ones that these drugs have specifically been shown to have an effect upon, urinary issues, bladder issues, these drugs have been shown to contribute. Even after these people only took these drugs for 3 years, people who took them for as little as 3 years. So for as little as 3 years, it increased the likelihood that they would develop dementia by 54%. That's not a fair trade-off. That's not a good trade-off. So I would highly recommend that you that if you have these, or any even these other issues as I spoke about last week, these psychotropic drugs that are being given for depression and this and that and the other, there's no way that I believe that these also don't contribute negatively to brain function. And who knows if these drugs are not also contributing to dementia and Alzheimer's and et cetera. So again, that article, and it went on to talk about later on in the article, you can check this article out yourself at realpharmacy.com. They went on to talk about delirium, how it can be similar to dementia, but it's not dementia. This condition, they point out, seems similar to dementia. The mental changes that occur in delirium happen within days in comparison to months or years. And that you, and it goes on to point out some other things. It also points out the difference between depression, and it also points out something very interesting with respect to how you can have a B12 deficiency, and this can actually lead to some issues which may mimic dementia of some sort. They also point out thyroid disease may exhibit some dementia-like symptoms, as well as alcoholism. So again, make sure that you rule out with your healthcare professional these issues, for you don't want to be treating dementia when you may simply have a severe B12 deficiency. And so again, this is very, very important. You need to understand that there are some prescription drugs that are specifically linked to an increased dementia risk. And these people in this study only took them for 3 years. And that was a significant number of them that experienced Alzheimer's or dementia. So our next article is from, again, we're still here in our Weekend National News Review. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry, here at Phase 3, the Phase 3 Wellness Podcast. And I know some, if you're listening live, you're probably listening on Blog Talk Radio, but this podcast will also be available at on YouTube. It'll be available at a number of places, iTunes, etc. So again, if you came in the middle and you wanted to catch the ending, or I'm sorry, if you came in the middle and you want to catch the beginning, after the show is over, within a few minutes, it would be available. It would also be available at Blog Talk Radio and these other, probably on YouTube and Facebook, Twitter, etc. So again, our next article for our first segment here comes from DrAxe.com. Dr. Axe, that's Dr. A-X-E, Dr. Axe. And this article is entitled Home Cleaning Products Bombshell: Exposure Equivalent to Smoking 20 Cigarettes a Day, says study. A study says, this is something that I talked about before, and the use of these chemical-based cleaners has caused a lot of issues, and people are just now really starting to understand how toxic these things are when used to clean their homes. This is a very interesting article, and of course I'm not going to have time to go into all of the details of it. It's a very long article, but I'm going to hit the high points, which I do in most articles. But it's an extremely important article, and I hope that you can really understand why this article is so important. Again, it's Dr. Axe, another article that came out this week, and the article points out that there was a study published in the American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine. And in this study, they investigated home cleaning products, including sprays and other cleaners. He goes on to point out that although the study didn't look at products' impacts on lung cancer risk specifically, it did aim to find out how cleaners damage the lungs and also impair lung function. He points out in this first of its kind study on home cleaning products, Norwegian researchers turned up some important findings, and he points out some of the key takeaways. Here's some of the key takeaways from this study. The study looked at 6,000 women over a 20-year span. It investigated the long-term impact of cleaners on respiratory health, including lung function decline and airway obstruction. Scientists looked at both people cleaning at home as well as people who clean as a profession. The study looked at forced vital capacity. In other words, that's how much air you can blow out of your lungs after taking a big, deep breath. Although they also looked at some other things. Cleaning as little as once a week from home over 20 years initiated, they said, significant lung damage. And they said also, one other thing that they pointed out was that breathing factors can naturally begin to decline with age, starting in the mid-20s, and the study found regularly using cleaning chemicals accelerated lung decline. Again, people cleaning professionally for a job experience lung damage on par with smoking 20 cigarettes daily for 10 to 20 years. Now, that's significant. Think about what's being said here. The last two things pointed out I found very interesting. Number one, cleaning as little as once a week from home over 20 years initiated significant lung damage, and people cleaning professionally for a job experienced lung damage on par with smoking 20 cigarettes every day for 10 to 20 years. That's the toxic effect from these chemical-based cleaners. The article goes on to point out how the researchers hypothesized that cleaning products, the irritating agents or the irritating ingredients in cleaning products actually cause the damage through different avenues, including number one, triggering the immune system dysfunction, number two, setting off inflammation and mucous membranes, and number three, damaging the airways on the cell, structural, and tissue level. He goes on to point out in this article that environmental working groups' science review of the study provides some recommendations. One, they recommend to save money and your lungs by simply using fewer cleaning products. Store-bought cleaner manufacturers aren't required to disclose all of the ingredients, they point out, so there's no way of really knowing what's in a specific mixture and how it'll affect your health in the short term or the long term. They also point out when another one of the recommendations is to avoid spray cleaners when possible. And if you must use them, spray onto a cloth first to reduce the number of tiny droplets that you breathe in. And they also pointed out to one of the other recommendations was to use microfiber cloths or microfiber cloths and water to do your dusting. The article goes on to point out further. It goes into a lot more detail, talking about how it says the study linking cleaner use to cigarette lung damage should certainly give you pause, Dr. Axe said. He said, but there are dozens and dozens of other peer-reviewed published studies outlining just how harmful cleaning products impact our bodies overall. And he says perhaps the scariest part is cleaner manufacturers, as I just pointed out, don't have to disclose all of the ingredients in their product, which is amazing to me that they allow to sell you a product that you're going to be spraying in your home around your children, your pets, etc., and yet they're not required to make it clear what chemicals are in the cleaning products, which that's amazing to me, and especially when we've talked about how many times the natural medicine community is attacked and not regulated, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and yet you have chemicals that are known to be detrimental to the body, and yet manufacturers are allowed to sell these chemical-based cleaners to you and without telling you what's actually in them. And for you to spray in your home around and to be inhaled by you and your family. Interesting mindset. Dr. Axe goes on to point out, he says, we just don't know what health effects stem from the way all of these questionable ingredients mix with each other. And he says, here's what we do know. Let's take a look at some of the ways toxic cleaning products can actually damage the body. And he goes on to cite a couple of studies. I want to cite these studies here that he points out. He points out an animal study that was published in Science in the year 2012, which demonstrated the harm that can result from living in a too sterile environment. He says researchers observed two groups of mice. The first group was bred with germ-free immune systems that like gut bacteria. The second group was given normal, healthy exposure to good and bad bacteria. When they were tested, the germ-free mice had much higher levels of inflammation in the colon and in the lung regions compared to the mice with normal germ exposure who had healthy immune responses. He says the germ-free mice had also developed symptoms similar to ulcerative colitis and asthma. Interesting. But the good news is once the germ-free mice were exposed to the normal amount of bacteria, 2 weeks after birth, their immune system responds, Banostad, he says, and the animals healed from their inflammatory conditions. So there we have, again, that's just one study that was done on these mice that pointed out, that shows some of the problems that can be done or that can be encountered. And so that the article goes on to point out further that some of the damage in general that cleaners can do to your body. And we'll look at a few of these before we move on. He points out that cleaning as little as one time a week over the long term does cause lung damage. Cleaning for a living, as I pointed out, for 20 years equals lung damage on par with smoking a pack a day for 10 to 20 years. He points out how there are weak exhalations. Researchers believe that these cleaners can damage your airways, inflame your mucous membranes, trigger your immune system, and cause lung dysfunction. He pointed out again that the study that we just looked at, that we just cited, the 2012 study, it basically shows how it can cause immune system mayhem. And he just goes on also, he also cites a study done on asthma, a 2010 study, which pointed out how cleaners exacerbate and cause new onset asthma. And he points out how the asthma triggers are spray cleaners, chlorine bleach, as well as other disinfectants. Again, we just don't know. And he points out many other studies and articles and whatnot that go on to show how these cleaners can also affect dermatitis. And he goes also, he points out how poisonous gases can also be can also be developed by mixing these cleaners as opposed to just using one at a time. So just using them one at a time is bad enough, but sometimes you can mix, which he points out as a common mistake, mixing bleach with an ammonia-based cleaner. And he talks about how it creates a chloramine gas. And he says just a few whiffs of mixing these two together within 24 hours can trigger a runny nose, eye, nose, throat, and airway irritation, teary eyes, sore throat, coughing, chest congestion, etc. And basically, I would recommend, and again, I'm not going to go in this long article. You can go and read that at draxe.com. You can actually, well, he actually kind of, I see, he points out a little bit what I was going to point out. I would highly recommend using essential oils as cleaner, oils like Thieves Oil Blend. And there are other things you can look into, but using natural-based cleaners that you may find at your health food store, you can order online using oils, essential oils like Thieves Oil and some of the other oils that they can be combined together as cleaners, lemon juice, some other things that can be made at home or that can be purchased. I would highly recommend they do just as good a job, if not better, without you being putting your health and your family's health and maybe even your pets' health at risk, those who keep pets in their homes. So again, these household, these home cleaning products, they can be very, very, very detrimental. And just if you ever use bleach and some of these other products to clean your home, you can know just by the smell and the effect within minutes. Your nose could be running, you may be sneezing. And then just thinking about inhaling that every week, you're going to, as this article pointed out and the study pointed out, that you're definitely at risk of developing some kind of lung issues. And especially if you're in the profession, the cleaning profession, where you're dealing with these cleaning chemicals daily, it's like smoking a pack of cigarettes every day, essentially, as he points out, or smoking 20 cigarettes a day, he says, as the article points out. Again, this is Dr. Keith Henry. You're listening to the Phase 3 Wellness Podcast. We just finished our first segment. That is the segment, the Weekend Natural News Review. We talked about two articles. We talked about that article is from draxe.com, and it's again entitled Home Cleaning Products Bombshell: Exposure Equivalent to Smoking 20 Cigarettes a Day, Says Study. And the other article was from realpharmacy.com, and it was entitled Common Prescription Drugs Linked to Increased Dementia Risk. Again, so that is that's our first segment, the Weekend Natural News Review. So now we're going to pivot over to our second segment, which is our healing food. Our second segment is our healing food. Now, in this healing food segment, as I said earlier in the beginning, we're going to be talking about pomegranate. Pomegranate. Pomegranate is not only a delicious food, but it's also a very nutritious food. So let's look at pomegranate. So let's look at some of the health benefits that are associated with it. Let's first look at the pomegranate composition. But before we get there, I just want to say that primarily let your food be your medicine and your medicine be your food. And so with that as our mindset, as a backdrop, let's look at some of the composition of pomegranate. Pomegranate, of course, has protein, carbohydrates. I'm sorry, it has carbohydrates. It has fiber. It has vitamin B1. It has vitamin B2, niacin. It has vitamin B6. It has folate. It contains some vitamin C. It contains some vitamin E. It contains some calcium, phosphorus, and magnesium. It also contains some iron, potassium. It has low levels of zinc, and of course it has no cholesterol, has very low saturated fat, and it has some sodium, natural sodium, naturally based sodium, which is a good kind of sodium. So again, when we think about pomegranate, we look at how it can help balance the body in terms of overall nutrients. And also we're going to look at how it can actually be used as a medicinal food. So again, that goes along the lines of allowing our medicine to be our food and our food to be our medicine. Now, let's look at some of the, I just went down the line of some of the nutrients that the pomegranate contains. But it's actually very rich. We're going to look at some of the nutrients that it's highest in. The pomegranate is quite rich in vitamin C, vitamin E, and vitamin B6. And it also contains significant amounts of vitamin B1, B2, and niacin. Beta carotene of vitamin A, provitamin A, and the most abundant minerals that the pomegranate contains are potassium, copper, and iron. So we see that it is packed full of vitamins, it's packed and full of minerals. Now, also, there's a non-nutritive side of it. There are other things in the, there are other antioxidants, et cetera, in the pomegranate. Now, the pomegranate has what we call tannins in very small amounts. These are much more prevalent in the rind of the fruit or in the membrane that separate the seeds. So, you know, when you open up a pomegranate, you see the white membranes inside. This is where more of the tannins are contained. Now, these tannins have an astringent or an anti-inflammatory effect on the mucosa of the digestive tract. So by eating these, it basically benefits the digestive tract overall by providing an anti-inflammatory effect. Remember, inflammation is the marker for many, many, many diseases, one of the chief being cancer and diabetes, and there are other ones. So therefore, it has tannins. It also contains citric acid as well as other organic acids. And these acids give the pomegranate its slightly bittersweet taste. So that's why you have the bittersweet taste, because of the citric acids contained in it. These actually also contribute to the restoration of the intestinal bacteria flora. So you have good bacteria and bad bacteria. Pomegranate actually contribute to the good bacteria in the gut. Also, pomegranates have what's known as anthocyanins, and these are what give it its reddish, bluish. These anthocyanins is what give both fruits and vegetables their color. And so it also has flavonoids, antiseptics, and anti-inflammatory substances, which actually significantly benefit the digestive tract. Now, also I want to point out how, and you may have heard this, or you may have heard it, some people may have heard it, associated with old wives' tales, if you will. But sometimes you will have, you may have heard that pomegranate is beneficial for worms. And this is true. I'm going to get to that in a second. But I just wanted to talk a little bit more about how it has such a beneficial, through the effects of the anthocyanins, such a beneficial effect on the gut, and having that beneficial effect is that having that important anti-inflammatory element to it. And so just remember, if you eat in harmony with the colors of the rainbow, being blue, indigo, violet, red, orange, yellow, I think I got all of them there. But if you eat in colors with the eat in harmony with the seven colors of the rainbow, and close to the diet, close to the garden rather, you will have much, much better health. And we can see that when we're talking about foods like pomegranate. As you can see, it has great benefit on the gastrointestinal tract. You know, many people have issues with Crohn's and ulcerative colitis and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They have these gut diseases, these digestive diseases. And in most cases, one of the main causes of these gut diseases is the eating habits, or the eating habits. Also, stress can also play a significant role. But even if you don't have stress, your eating unhealthy eating habits certainly contribute to diseases like Crohn's, ulcerative colitis, etc. And so when you're eating foods like this, like pomegranates and the different fruits, a variety of fruits and vegetables, you're going to be getting these foods that the Creator has packed with such nutrients that the body can use for healing. And some of these foods like pomegranates, not only are they do they have significant anti-inflammatory substances that help the gastrointestinal tract, but they also have potent antioxidants within that goes to help your cells. The goes can make their way within the cells and basically halt the degenerative effect of aging, as well as diseases like cancer from getting a foothold. So we need to understand that whenever we're eating these types of foods, and if we're eating a varied diet, if we're eating in harmony, like we've talked about on this show before, it's very important to understand that we are that we follow this concept. Now, see, I have a call here. Let me see if I can bring you in. Give me just a second here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, Dr. Henry. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Okay, pretty good. You know, is unintentional chronic dehydration, it's cause of the all the diseases we have. According to Dr. Batman, I'm sure you have read his YouTube it, Dr. Batman and Water Cure, or just put Water Cure, you will watercure.com. You will see his legacy. But the question is, why the doctors, they don't even put this in your medical record? Because if they ask the patient how many glass of water you take, maybe say 2 or 3 a day, and with all the medications they give them, and, you know, it's why they don't say you need to drink more water. According to Dr. Batman, you need to drink half of your weight into water. For example, 3 pound person may need, it needs at least 150 ounce of water a day, means 1 gallon and almost a little bit more than 1 gallon. So, plus they use Himalaya sea salt. Dr. Batman says that, and you know, food, everything you make it with the sea salt, and just put a little bit of sea salt and just put it with the water you drink. That's it. It says it All will right. cure a lot of your diseases. Are you agree with Dr. Batman or not, please?
Oh, no, I agree with his perspective on the benefits of water for the body. Yes, I'm familiar with him. I have his book, The Body's Many Cries for Water. And water, of course, the concept of putting the pinch of sea salt is also, I also agree with that. Of course, water is crucial as the body is probably about 65 to 75% water. The brain is about 85% water. The blood is probably about 85% water as well. And so, of course, sometimes you can even reverse high blood pressure just by increasing the water intake because once the water, once you're dehydrated or in the body's in a dehydrated state, seeing as how the blood is about 85% water, of course, if you're dehydrated, it causes the blood to be more thick as it goes through the arteries and the veins. And as it goes through the arteries, of course, if it's thicker, it's going to cause the pressure upon the vessels to increase and your blood pressure is going to go up. So sometimes, simply, I agree, dehydration is the foundation of many, many, many abnormalities and diseases. And it should always be, this is why if you hear me on here when I talk about the laws of health, one of the laws of health that I teach and use is water, of the therapeutic use of water, both internally and externally, can be a very effective tool in pretty much any disease. We're using it alone or using it in combination with other modalities.
Absolutely. Yes, Dr. Henry. I mean, there's some, but you know, it's when you see it, when you sit on the computer too much, you don't pay attention to walking. Once you're walking every day, at least 30 to 1 hour, I mean, your body say thank you to you in many ways. And if you want to punish yourself, you listeners of Dr. Henry, go ahead, sit on the couch and watch TV or sit in your computer, and then positions is problem too. You know, sometimes chair is up in not correct positions or etc. And your body gets hurt. I mean, as I sit, I'm talking, you know, it's okay right now, but then after this, I have to go stretch myself, etc. You know, you have to take care of your body and don't punish yourself. Don't punish your body by not walking. Exercise is very, very important. What do you think?
It definitely is. It definitely is. And this is again, another one of the elements that we teach here. We have eight that we say are called the laws of health, which is trust in the Creator, sunshine, exercise, water, air, rest, diet, and self-control or temperance. Those are the general laws of health that we teach, and then there are subsets under it. For instance, exercise, the benefit is a general rule, and then we go into the details. Okay, exercise, what type of exercise should you do, how often, all of those things fall on it. So yes, again, it's one of the things, a body in motion is going to increase your circulation, which is going to help your health, where a sedentary lifestyle is going to cause the blood not to circulate as freely. And when the blood is not circulating as freely, bacteria, microbes, whatnot can kind of get a foothold on you. And so, yes, exercise is indeed crucial.
Yes, yes. I don't know. Have you heard of the urine therapy? Because right now there's another module. I mean, is there? They have just recent. They're going to have a conference in Las Vegas next week. But the question is urine therapy is another way? But to increase your body metabolism and get rid of disease, have you heard about urine therapy, or do you accepting it, or do you have you are not sure of it, or what's your input, please?
Did you say urine therapy?
Yeah, urine. Means you drink your own urine.
Oh no, I've heard of that. I know people who have used, not necessarily drank their urine, but I know people who've actually used it when they've had pink eye. I probably would not go down that road, but I would probably use something different. But I do know that some people swear by urine therapy for certain issues. There are people who are, like I said before, I know people specifically, friends who I have from Jamaica, who told me that when they were small, when they would get an eye infection, they would basically take their own urine and put it in their eye, and it would clear it up. Well, not an eye infection, but yeah, essentially eye infection. But I think there are other things that can be used that are just as effective. And again, but as far as me knowing a lot about it, no, I don't.
So you are not approve of it, but in some cases maybe you approve of it. Is that right?
Well, I wouldn't use it personally, but I'm just saying I know of people who have. I don't know of anyone who have used it in terms of drinking it personally. I don't know anyone personally who have done that. I really haven't looked into it, but I said personally, I probably would use a different path.
Yeah, probably water. Yeah, it's better. Water. Yeah, I haven't. We have had some conversation with other people in BTR that they are very. They have done that, or even newspaper. I mean, like acne is gone. If you put it on your skin, your acne will gone. And but they say, you know, some people may go extreme, drink 1 gallon a day of it, like hydration through your own natural, urine. But again, yes, I personally, I have investigated that, but I am not sure either that is kind of right approach. But maybe for a skin, you can do that to see if your acne gone, so that doesn't harm, I think. But personally, drinking is just unless you are under earthquake zone, if any country, yeah, you have no choice to drink your own urine to hydrate right. yourself. Hopefully the, you know, help comes from the upper end, you know. Then
right.
that's maybe emergency cases, yes, you are allowed to drink your own urine. But except
right.
that, yeah, I don't think so is proper. But
right.
I don't know, have you heard about these three airplanes that are locked down? One in New York came in from Qatar. People are coughing. I mean, first...
Yes.
And
yes,
then there are two planes, for sure, is from Paris and Munich to Pennsylvania, Philadelphia. Both are grounded, both under the CDC observation. Both of them basically quarantine 100%. But the first plane, they let the people go. And
right.
then only the sick one were taken to the hospital. So now they're going to go after those people who were on the first flight from Dubai to New York. So now,
right.
That's don't you think so? It's going. I mean, what is this, like a Hanta virus, a Spanish flu, or something? Do you think it's an act of terrorism or what?
At this point, I don't know if it's an act of terrorism. I found it kind of strange that they let so many people go so quick.
Yes, sir.
I found that kind of strange. I think the first reports that I heard were that they typically determine that only 10 people went out of the 100, but I still found that a bit strange that so many people would be released so quick after what was reported as so many people getting sick from the beginning.
First plane, the first,
right,
and the second,
right.
and third plane, they quarantine all of them without
right.
even letting them go. So why? Yeah, go ahead, please. Go ahead.
Right.
What you were saying? Sorry.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yes, and I just found that to be a bit strange, and was it an act of terrorism? Who knows? At this point, you know, because these days so many things are going on. You know, it could have been not an act of terrorism. It could have been something, some type of undermining secret, something that was done. It's hard to say. You know,
maybe it was a test for the future, or
possibly.
I mean, was it? Testing like a Spanish flu or the monkeypox virus that is already one person infected in London died
right.
today from monkeypox. I mean, they caught him into the airport, I guess. He was so
right.
sick. But again, why they let those other people go? I don't understand it. Because then each one are the host. And the host can make other hosts sick. And then
right.
other hosts can make other hosts sick. It is like a computer virus.
You're right.
Virus,
you're right. And it could be, you know, you can end up with an epidemic from one or two people spreading
yes.
it from person to person. Where are you calling from again?
Mike from Singapore.
Mike, okay. You called last week, right? I remember you now.
Yes.
Right.
I believe.
All right,
I believe,
Mike,
I would like
to keep talking to you, but I got about 10 minutes left and I got to finish up. But feel
sure,
free
sure.
to call in anytime that you like, all right?
Okay, I appreciate your guidance and everything. You are very, very up-to-date, doctor, and we value you in BTR. Thank you, sir.
Again, yeah. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Again, we would like to thank Mike for calling in and giving some of his insights and asking some of his questions. As we were talking about pomegranate, we'll finish up with that, and then we'll go into our last probably 7 or 8 minutes. We'll talk about our healing herb today, which is black cohosh. But I want to also, we were talking about the benefits of pomegranate. And I just want to talk about, again, let your medicine be your food and your food be your medicine. One of the things that pomegranate can help a lot to do is for intestinal disorders overall. The pomegranate is actually suitable in cases of infectious diarrhea even, caused by even colitis. Because again, as I said earlier, it's an astringent and it has anti-inflammatory properties on an action on your digestive tract. It can also help you if you have gas, excess gas. Pomegranates can help that. Or also, it can also benefit if you're having intestinal cramps. And actually, there have been people who've actually had chronic cases of ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease that they found very, very beneficial. And they've got very beneficial results from eating pomegranate. Now, I've had some cases. Cases of Crohn's disease in the past. And Crohn's disease, yeah, it can be very debilitating. And so, if someone has been diagnosed with Crohn's disease, one of the things that they might want to consider is pomegranate. And they're gonna have to change their eating habits in most cases. In most cases, that's what put them there, a large part of what put them there. Also, pomegranates can also, they have been used and can be used in dealing with intestinal parasites, such as tinea or tapeworm in particular. In fact, if someone has like an intense vermifuge, if you have tapeworms or tinea, in general, it's good for worms in general, but specifically tinea or tapeworms. And specifically the white parts of the pomegranate and the rinds. So they can be, these parts are more, the more bitter parts. So the white part and the rinds can be, the rind can be grinded into powder or ground up, as well as the white parts. And that's very, very efficacious in dealing with worms. Pomegranates can also be very beneficial as a result of its astringent action on the body. It can be very beneficial for having for excess stomach acid or having an irritated stomach. In general, gastrointestinal issues. This also can be good for iron deficiency anemia. Pomegranate contains a significant amount of copper, of course, which is a trace element that facilitates the absorption of iron. So again, if you have iron deficiency anemia, then eating pomegranates can help you assimilate iron because of the amount of copper that's contained in the fruit. Again, it's also been shown to help in cases of, we don't have time to go into this in detail, but in case of arteriosclerosis, hypertension, and other metabolic disorders. So again, that's pomegranate. So not only, as I said before, is pomegranate a very tasty fruit, it's also a very beneficial fruit for your health, especially for your gastrointestinal issues. There are other fruits and vegetables that are good for your gastrointestinal issues as well. But today in our Healing Herb segment, we just wanted to talk about that in particular. Finally, and this is our last segment, we pivot over to our last segment, the Healing Herb segment. We're going to talk about black cohosh. Of course, many people have heard of black cohosh. It's a very, very popular herb. It's been used for a long time for things like relieving stress and nervous tension in women. It is one of the best-selling herbs around the world, actually. Very, very popular herb, very, very well-known herb. And so just like to talk about a little bit about it. Black cohosh actually has been shown to help balance hormone levels in both men and in women. And the most important use of black cohosh is in maintaining the therapeutic response to estrogen replacement therapy. If a person has been on it and is gradually withdrawn, I don't advocate estrogen replacement therapy from a synthetic drug perspective, but those who do go on it, they found that black cohosh, when they come off, can help as they're withdrawn from the drug. The herb, of course, is also, as I said earlier, useful in the treatment of stress-related symptoms during menopause, as well as PMS. And black cohosh also nourishes your respiratory system, and it can actually also soothe your throat. Now, there are some specific benefits that has been associated specifically with black cohosh and certain health conditions specifically. And black cohosh has been used and people have gotten benefits from black cohosh who have blurred vision, PMS, as I said earlier, because black cohosh actually, in terms of PMS, black cohosh actually offsets a decline in estrogen. And a lot of times, as women get past a certain age or they get into menopause, their estrogen level will begin to drop. But not only does it help in areas where the estrogen levels begin to drop, but so when you have PMS, when women who are premenopausal, they will oftentimes, there are other things that can be used that are more effective, but I would also combine black cohosh not only in terms of, not only for menopausal symptoms, but black cohosh can also be used in premenstrual syndrome symptoms. So again, it can have a very beneficial effect on the body, on the hormones overall for both men and women. So the point I'm trying to make is that don't think that it's just good for menopausal symptoms. Now, ideally, if you have PMS, there's some other things that you would combine with it for PMS symptoms, but it can also be used for PMS as well. Now, some women have reported, specifically women, because they're the ones that tend to use it more. These are some of the things that they've reported, some of the benefits that they've received from taking black cohosh. It's been reported to help lessen hot flashes, to help lessen vaginal dryness, headaches, dizziness, to help with depressed mood, which is like depression, as well as other hormone-related symptoms. So again, anytime you're dealing with the hormones like that, it can be very tricky. But black cohosh is one of the best herbs to deal with when hormones are kind of out of whack, or when you're trying to figure out exactly what's going on with your hormones. Black cohosh has been used to help with fibroids. And the reason being is black cohosh contains at least three classes of compounds that actually act to help regulate hormone use. And as a result, it's been found to help with fibroids. Fibroids are typically when you have too much estrogen. And typically when you have fibroids, you find that that you have the estrogen to progesterone ratio is thrown off, basically a hormone imbalance. And oftentimes you will end up with PMS or ultimately, in many cases, fibroids. But black cohosh can help that. But as I said, there are other herbs that I would combine and use, like chasteberry, or sometimes you may see it called Vitex, if I was dealing with those types of cases. Again, but black cohosh also has been found to help with infertility. Again, and so there have been some things. We'll go into maybe future shows more detail about black cohosh. But I am almost out of time. And so when we consider the use of black cohosh, it is one of the best herbs for hormonal issues. It's definitely one of the best herbs for hormonal issues. So if you're a woman that's experiencing hormonal issues, I recommend, though, that you you work with a herbalist or a naturopath or a medical doctor who's learned in natural medicine. And you'll find that this herb that the Creator has given, along with many of the other ones that He's given, will basically do just what you're seeking to have done. My name is Dr. Keith Henry. Have a blessed day. I'm out of time.